Most birds we won't actually see land, but we'll hear quite a few landing. Okay, you'll just hear a crash in the branches, sometimes followed by a thump as they hit the ground. Crash, 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 thump.
We are on the west coast of Aotearoa, New Zealand. The sun has set and it's almost dusk. We are out looking for one of New Zealand's special seabirds that nests only in this part of the world. To put things in perspective, the west coast of the South Island stretches for over 500 kilometers, and this bird nests only on a small 8-kilometer patch of that coastline.
We go through a bit of a track through the bush. We've got duck boards down to get across the creek so you don't get wet feet. Yeah. So we'll just head on our way down through the bushy track.
This is Bruce Stewart Menteith taking us on a walk into the forest. We crossed a stream and came to the start of long wooden stairs going up the hill, built by Bruce himself.
Yeah, so there's a lot of steps on the way up. So, if you've got a sore knee, that could be a problem.
These are nocturnal birds that we are looking for, and the forest was dense. So it was pretty dark. We made our way up the steps with flashlights on, and we arrived at a viewing shelter. As we sat down on a wooden bench, in front of us we could see tall trees and the hills beyond through the canopy gap.
Don't turn your back on this canopy gap in front of us. Some birds use this side as a landing. They come in straight towards us and plump down to the ground, sometimes landing right on the deck of the viewing shelter, but sometimes in amongst the kiki there. And if you're really lucky, you could have one land on your lap. So it's just a matter of sitting down, make yourself at home.
Suddenly, we saw a silhouette of a large bird flying right towards us.
Here it comes.
It was fully black with a strong yellowish beak, and it landed right next to us on the wooden bench. And this was the bird we were looking for, the Westland Petrel. We are on a breeding colony of the Westland Petrels, and this one is on Bruce's property. He's been working to protect these birds for decades now, and runs a nature tour along with his wife, Denise Howard, taking visitors up to the petrel colony and sharing how special these birds are.
Well, I've just had so much to do with the birds over the years. I just love actually exposing people to wildlife like this, you know, and seeing their responses. You know, people are just blown away. For a starter, they think that, well, what are we coming up into the forest for? This is a seabird. It should be on the coastline, you know. And then these birds start falling out of the sky and crashing through the forest. And they think, what's this? These suicidal birds crashing through the trees. And so, yeah, it just seems rather bizarre. We've got this seabird that lives in the forest and climbs trees to take off again. And what better can you get when a bird comes flying in and lands on their lap? It's great.
My name is Karthik, and this is Tune Into Nature, a podcast bringing you sounds and stories from the wild. We journey through Aotearoa, New Zealand's wild places to meet unique wildlife and hear from the people working to protect them. I hope these stories will inspire you to enjoy nature in your own way. I talked to Bruce about how he has protected the Westland Petrels over the years, his special connection to these seabirds, and about the looming threats to the petrels and the surrounding wilderness. To see the Westland Petrels, a bird that I had never seen before, and to meet Bruce, I travelled coast to coast from Dunedin to Ponnakaiki, a town on the west coast. I went through the Southern Alps, through the iconic Arthur's Pass village, which looked like a hamlet from Harry Potter with the recent snow, and down to the west coast where the golden hour sun was shining over the Tasman Sea. The Ponnakaiki town is small even by New Zealand standards, about 100 permanent residents, with the nearest supermarkets and fuel stations 40 kilometers away. It is bordered by the lush, hilly forests of Paparoa National Park on the east, a dramatic coastline with rock formations, and the Tasman Sea on the west. So if you love the forests and the sea, this is your place. The Westland Petrel spends most of its time at sea, and they come to land only to nest, and their breeding colonies are found only between the Ponnakaiki River and the Waiwhara Creek. one of which is on Bruce's property.
I discovered that in 1987. No one else seemed to even know that it was there. And 1991 built the walkway and viewing shelter there.
Back at the viewing shelter, we could see silhouettes of other petrels gracefully gliding around.
You'll see them coming in towards us, and then they'll peel off at the last second and go around again. And then they'll come, there goes that one. Yeah, it's locating its landing site, and it'll think, no, that's not time to land. We'll go around and have another go, and they'll circle around for 5 or 10 minutes, each time more closely locating their particular landing site, until eventually they say, okay, this is it, and then they go, and they just crash through the branches and plump to the ground, and then their burrow is just nearby. So it's pretty amazing feat of navigation.
We were careful not to switch on any lights, as that would disorient the birds, especially the white light LEDs.
If there's a bright light on the ground, they get disorientated and they circle around trying to figure out where they are, crash land, and then if they haven't injured themselves, they're wandering around. Remember, they can't take off from level ground. And they wander around looking for a launching site, but there's none around. They won't be able to find one, and they'll die of exhaustion if they don't get run over on the road first. Or, perchance, we might actually pick them up off the road before they get squashed. Whoops, I just saw a bird fly past. A few years ago, the New Zealand Transport Agency were changing the lights through Punakaiki into LEDs, and that immediately set off alarm bells, so I contacted them, and we eventually negotiated a solution to the streetlights causing what we call fallout, and that was turning the streetlights off in Punakaiki. So during the fledging period, November, December, the streetlights go off around Punakaiki. It's the first time in New Zealand where anything like that has happened to benefit wildlife.
And the petrel that had landed next to us was still on the seat, resting.
When the birds land, they'll sit quietly for a few minutes and then make their way to their burrow. When they get to their burrow, their mate will probably be there. It was still the time of the year where there could be a number of birds still on guard duty, guarding their chick. If their mate is there, then they'll have a bit of a conversation. So there'll be a lot of squawking start up, and the colony will gradually come alive with noise. So, rapturous greeting.
In the subdued yellow light of his torch, Bruce takes out a pocket watch.
Right. I'll just check the time. Every time I come up here, I'm recording everything that I see and hear. So it's 6:34. So the first bird seen at 6:34, and most birds will fly in within an hour from now.
Bruce has been coming up to the petrel colony for decades, so over time he has developed a large, valuable data set about these birds that are otherwise hard to study. The growth of a seabird colony is measured by the number of fledglings, young birds that fly out each year. When Bruce started monitoring in 1991, there were 34 fledglings, and it slowly started to go up, but then something happened.
The year 2000, we had a couple of dogs owned by somebody who lived just down the road. Those dogs, they were missing for 2 weeks, and they weren't just sort of wandering up and down the road. They were in the forest. And in that time, they visited our sub-colony. They killed at least a dozen adults. That knocked our sub-colony back, and its productivity knocked it back by 10 years, just one dog attack. We've got cameras in our sub-colony. I know what's coming and going. And mostly it's rats and the odd stoat and the odd possum.
Bruce kept a check on these invasive pests through trapping, and over the years, the petrel numbers have slowly bounced back. In the recent years, there are around 80 fledglings each year. While there are slight ups and downs, there's been an upward trend in the numbers. Bruce has hand-drawn maps of the colony, and more recently, GPS maps with the burrows marked out.
There are a few burrows around here. I used to see a lot of non-breeding birds hanging out around here. And pre-breeders, it takes quite a while for the birds to, once they first come back, takes them a long time, maybe 5 years, but or even longer, before they've found a mate, a good burrow, and started to raise their first chick. So this area around here, I used to think, was the singles club. There seems to be young, unemployed birds hanging around. But then, lo and behold, some of them started digging burrows and then eventually raising chicks here. So the colony's gradually been expanding around the edges.
To nest, the petrels dig burrows using their strong bills and feet.
They do like particular soils for digging in. It's most of the subcolony itself, or the whole breeding ground, sorry, the soils are formed over marine mudstones, and they make quite good soils for digging into. Across the valley, the soils are formed over marine gravels, and it's a totally different type of forest. In the petrel colony, we've got northern Raton, Nikau, Kamahi, Quintinia, Hinau type forest. But on the other side of the Waifero Valley, it's beech podocarp forest. The beeches, they thrive better on more impoverished soils. And of course, the soils themselves, they're not suitable for petrels to dig into.
Introduced predators like possums, stoats, wiped out many seabirds, and Westland petrels are one of the few petrels that remain on mainland New Zealand. So these birds are the last remnant of an ecosystem found nowhere else.
The ecology of this forest has grown up in the presence of petrels. So the petrels are bringing in guano, and birds are dying, and eggs are breaking, and the whole works. The birds are aerating the soils. Now all life in this forest here has got the chemical signature of a petrel colony. And that's the same with all other insect life and bird life. So it's in the water flowing down into the streams. It's in the freshwater insects living in the streams. And because I take my water supply from the stream coming down off the petrel colony, I've got the same chemical signature in my body too. So I'm part of the ecology of the petrel colony. I think it's quite neat.
The petrels might not get any points for grace for their landing, aka crashing through the trees, but they are majestic flyers doing epic long distances.
A feeding trip for one breeding bird could take them right around the South Island. One bird was tracked, they went right around the South Island in one feeding trip. And that trip took them about a week. But when they're not breeding, the birds disperse from the New Zealand waters and head across the Pacific to the west coast of South America. And they will actually go around Cape Horn and into the Atlantic a short distance up the east coast of South America. So you can find them anywhere between mostly sort of east coast of Australia to the west coast of South America.
For Bruce, the petrels are something that his family enjoys being a part of.
Well, Denise has been part and parcel of the same thing. She's been a great supporter of everything to do with the petrels that you've visited so far, and Denise has always been a great supporter, and of course our children. The petrels have always been a major feature of their lives.
I've often just felt like I'm the behind-the-scene person.
You're hearing from Denise Howard, Bruce's wife.
For me, in those first few years while the children were little, it was really just administration. And then as the children got older, I began to take more of the tours. So over the years, as we've worked with the birds and fought for their protection, they've really just become an extension of our family. We've just been so committed to their well-being and survival that it's been a really big physical and emotional and particularly a financial commitment for our family.
This happened just in April this year. I was out on the Otako Sea Lord fishing boat.
This is Sankita Howard, Bruce's daughter. She's a marine biologist, and she's sharing with us her connection to these seabirds.
We were fishing within sight of the east coast of the North Island, near the Cook Strait. And so the petrels will come through the Cook Strait feeding. And we'd had some really big storms, and that's quite intense for me, and I get really seasick. And I felt so comforted by the sight of the petrels to be like, huh, look at those guys. They might be flying home to mum and dad's place tonight. I'm not really so far away from home right now.
The walkway and the stairs aren't as big as how I had recalled from my childhood. So it wasn't like climbing Mount Everest to get up the top, which was a bit of a relief.
That's Bruce's son, Sky Stewart Menteith, talking about his recent visit to the petrel colony.
And then the birds itself, cool to see them again. And again, I had seen them sort of 5 or so years ago, but they weren't as big as they were in my memory. So they're kind of the size, their body, you know, kind of the size of like a large chicken, I suppose. But when they expand their wings, that's pretty cool.
Like we had heard, pest control is a part of protecting native wildlife in New Zealand.
Oh, I had a good one about Dad and pest control.
This is Bruce's daughter, Ishta Tumi.
Pest control formed a pretty big part of our childhood, that we were really involved in trapping. And when I was quite young, Dad had caught a possum in a live trap. And I remember he brought it up to our front yard to give us a talk about possums. And he had reached into the trap and decided to get the possum out to really show us. And so he'd removed it from the trap. And I remember the exact words that came out of his mouth as he lifted it from the trap were, "If you hold it by the tail, it can't bite you." And he's holding it out at arm's length. And it flipped itself up, grabbed onto its own tail, climbed its tail, and then bit him in the arm. Through that demonstration, we learned how to not hold a possum.
To continue advocating for the Westland Petrels, Bruce set up the Westland Petrel Conservation Trust, which includes some of the family members as well. And the trust now has huge responsibilities with looming threats to the survival of the petrels.
We've got another potential problem for the petrels just starting up just down the road. Well, they've applied for a mining license to mine ilmenite sands, and the threat there is that the mine will be operating 24/7, and they'll need bright lights to be able to see what they're doing. And again, they can draw the petrels, particularly the fledglings, back into the land again and suffer from fallout as a result.
The threat of mining companies is not new to Bruce, nor to the West Coast.
Well, there have been a number of mining proposals for this ilmenite along the Barrytown Flats over the years. The one that we dealt with in the 90s was with Westland Ilmenite. These guys wanted to come in and dig up the whole Barrytown Flats, and they wanted to build a big industrial plant only about within 500 metres from our house. This operation was going to be running 24/7 for maybe 25, 30 years. And the industrial plant was plonked right on the front doorstep of the petrol colony, burning 30,000 tonnes of coal a year. So it was going to turn this area into a huge industrial zone. Truck movements coming and going all day long, all night long, a massive dredge operating, a big industrial plant with magnetic separators and this sort of thing. And people were worried that, of course, this operation was going to affect the petrels as well.
The land next door to Bruce's property was crucial for the mine to be set up in the first place. So to try and save the petrels and the ecosystem, Bruce and Dennis bought this land next door to prevent the mining company being set up.
And we didn't have any money, so we made a deal with the what was then the Forest Heritage Fund to on-sell most of it to the government, which would be added to the Paparoa National Park.
The Forest Heritage Fund is now Nature Heritage Fund, and it helps landowners to permanently protect their land. In most cases, these are highly important indigenous ecosystems. It also prevents any future landowner from destroying the ecosystem.
And we kept the front section where the industrial plant was going to be located. And that was good for the petrels.
But it was a hard time for Bruce and his family.
So we bought this property. I think we took possession about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. By 11 o'clock that night, the house on the property had been burnt to the ground by the supporters of the project. Well, luckily we did have it insured, but it was still quite a blow for us, and it was a major blow for the community too. A lot of people just freaked out. It was a very, very nasty time. But eventually the mining company gave up and went away. But the harassment we were getting exposed to at that time was just so intense.
Bruce had to move out of the West Coast with his family to stay away from the hostile elements in the community. He eventually returned after 10 years, and he found there was a bit of a change for the better.
new people had come into the community that had come here because they liked the environment. And so, yeah, there's a different feeling now. And it doesn't look like it's going to be the same way with this latest mining operation, because there are so many people in the community that just really don't want to go ahead. And they're standing up and making their voices heard.
Members of the local community and other organizations like Forest and Bird are campaigning against the proposed mine. The mining company has submitted a resource consent, which is asking for permission for the mine to be set up, and submissions from the public have been received. The community is waiting for a decision on the resource consent. At the time of recording of this episode, we do not know if the mine will go ahead. Over the years, there have been some special moments with the Petrels.
The fledglings themselves, and some of them come onto the seats and the viewing shelter, and use the seats as a practice launching site, and they just sort of jump and fly down in front. They can't get airborne, and then they'll climb up and have another go and jump down. But if there happens to be a human sitting there, then they just treat you like a mossy stump, and they'll climb up on top of your head and do a practice launch from the top of your head. It's quite a hard case. Then you realise how prickly their claws are. They've got claws on their webbed feet, and they climb a little bit like a mountain climber. I liken their beak to being like an ice axe, and their claws like crampons on your boots. It can be quite an experience to have a Westland petrel climb up on top of your head to take off from. Although you have to watch out if you you don't want to frighten them and cause them to poop down your neck or anything like that.
Early next morning, in the pre-dawn darkness, we walked back to the colony to see the petrels take off, but before that, sat down to listen to their morning chorus.
They have their own version of a dawn chorus. It's debatable as to how sort of chorusy they are, but they just make a lot of noise. People are so far removed from nature these days. You know, we live in concrete jungles and that sort of thing. To be able to experience, you know, like you watch TV and you see a David Attenborough program or something like that, well, you can have that experience too. Just come along and see the Westland petrels. Yeah.
This was great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Come again.
Through the Westland Petrel Conservation Trust, Bruce has been doing public events to raise awareness about the petrels and is running nightly petrel patrols. Volunteers walk the coast road looking for any birds that might have disorientated and crash-landed. These birds will be rescued, treated if injured, and then released back into the wild. Along with the local community and other organizations, Bruce and his family are protecting these rare seabirds. You are listening to Tune Into Nature with me, Karthik. If you'd like to see the Westland petrels up close, you can book a tour. Check out the links in the description and learn more about the Westland Petrel Conservation Trust. We will be back with more great stories about wildlife and nature, so please follow the podcast on your favorite listening app. And while you're there, please leave a rating. That would really help. The podcast is kindly supported by the New Zealand Lottery Grants Environment and Heritage Fund, administered by Te Tari Tai Whenua, the Department of Internal Affairs. Supported by ORFM Dunedin and Science Communication, University of Otago. Thanks for listening.